You're listening to a Clare FM podcast. Morning Focus broadcasts weekdays from 9am to 12 midday.
Lots of questions coming in for John Underhill. He's with us later, but I have to make sure now that I don't ask our vet queries to Dr. Moore Finn from the Anastomia Medical Centre. I got a hack and cough and a dog, I'm telling you.
John would be far superior at this stuff than me now.
And snotty noses and wainlands and a schlatted house up in Ina. Tommy, I've got your question. I'll put it to John Underhill later on. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And thanks very much for joining us this morning. Dr. Moore Finn, of course, from the Ennis Family Medical Centre. And the biggest question is the one I'm going to ask you first of all. How can we all stop ourselves being sick at Christmas? What can we do to look after ourselves at
this
time
question.
Of year?
There's no simple answer to it, though. And actually, people are so intolerant of being sick at Christmas. And I understand it, you know, because it's a, well, for a lot of people, it's a nice bit of time off and they don't want to be wasting it being unwell. And for children, you really don't want your kids sick at Christmas because it's such a magical time. I suppose, well, the first thing I'll say is that, you know, you can still, if you haven't had the flu vaccine and you're one of the target group, or if you're concerned about it, you should have it because you still have time. The flu vaccine is a seasonal vaccine and it's for the entire winter season, so into February, March, April.
And probably in its peak in the new year, so certainly. You still get your bang for your buck.
You get your money's worth out of it, exactly. And it does maybe take about 10 days or so for it to kick in, but certainly I would suggest people go and do that, particularly if they're surrounded by people with flu symptoms. Very, very careful about if you have colds or flus, you know that thing they used to say, that kind of you sneeze or cough into a tissue and bin it and wash your hands. And that really is probably the best way to stop viral infection spreading, because most of them spread by droplet infection. So when you sneeze into the air, they'll kind of land on different surfaces or on people, and also by your hands. So the thing about washing your hands, you spread infection by hand contact more than anything else. So I'm you know, I don't want people to be kind of obsessed about hand sanitizers and things like that, but certainly this time of year, whenever you you know, ever so often, you should wash your hands, particularly I haven't been to the toilet.
Are you fond of those hand sanitizers?
I don't use them at all, actually. No? But I wash my hands every between every patient during examinations as well. I know you can't do that. I think they probably have a purpose. Yeah, some of them can be quite astringent and can be kind of rough on your hands, and they can kind of dry your skin out. And if they don't do that, they're probably a good idea. How effective they are, it's hard to say. I think good fashioned soap and water is probably the best thing, but in the absence of that, and I know in schools around the time of the swine flu, they definitely had them in the classrooms and stuff, and it was a very good idea. So that is one way of stopping the spread of widespread viral infections. Of course, there's certain things this time of year that you can't do a huge amount about. You know, it is the time of year when you will have colder weather. Colder weather reduces our immune system. Tiredness reduces our immune system. So watching all of that, making sure you're getting enough rest, making sure you're getting enough vitamin C.
Can be hard. Both of those, actually.
Can be hard. Yeah, it can, of course. And, you know, if you have the early signs of a cold, mind yourself. Wallow in it for a day if you want to, you know. It's the time of year you can do that too. You put on a fire, you kind of, you know, and drink lots of hot fluids and rest and paracetamol. And the simple things are all you need to do most of the time. Most people don't need to go anywhere near any doctor or pharmacy or anything. You just do the simple things and it'll settle. And if you're concerned, or if you have persistent high temperatures in a child, or any of those red flag symptoms like a kind of really nasty cough or really serious headache, you know, the things that you would be concerned about, a rash, anything like that, then you would check it out. But most often it's simple. It's if you mind it in the early stages, it won't last any more than a day or two.
My little fella's got a barking cough at the moment.
Has he had it for long?
Late last week, I would say. Maybe nearly a week at this stage. Probably the middle of last week.
Most of it, like if he hasn't got a high temperature, if he isn't miserable and if he's still eating, that usually isn't anything to be too concerned about. And very often it's just a head cold that's dripping down the back of his nose, his
throat. I think it's chesty though, listening to the cough.
Well, it can sound chesty. It's funny, like a child's cough can sound very congested and chesty sometimes, and it's really just a rattle in the throat.
Okay.
Now, if you're concerned, or if his breathing is fast or anything like that, you should get him checked out. But very often a cough is really just the rattle from the head cold, and it's congestion. And I'm always harking on about kind of putting them in the bath and decongesting.
Yeah.
And it's better than anything. And I think this time of year, doing that nearly every night, it's a great way to
if you can get them out of the bath. That's my problem. Seriously? It's like, David, it's getting cold. No, I want 5 more minutes. And that's my issue at the moment.
And actually, they love it. And it's
because he knows
really
it's bedtime. That's what he's trying to avoid, you know.
That's a whole different issue.
But anyway, I don't want to make this a personalized visit, but it is. That's what's happening. Yeah. It's tough, though, with kids because a lot of the things you just talked about, you know, washing your hands and using tissues and putting them in the bin, unless you're literally standing over them 24/7, you're not.
It's hard to do, but you can teach them these. It should be their go-to. It should be their default position, you know. So if it's something that you just constantly say to them, they learn to do it. It's like they have to learn to flush the toilet, you know. You know, they don't necessarily want to do it either. The other thing, of course, is kind of watching food as well this time of year, that, you know, especially when it comes to turkeys and all this sort of thing, that they're properly cooked.
Yes.
Chicken and turkey and all that, those kind of white meats, are one of the biggest sources of salmonella. So you don't want to be getting tummy bugs. Norovirus is very common this time of year as well. So just another reason to wash your hands, but be careful what you're eating and how it's cooked.
Just finally, you're a big proponent, as all doctors are, of exercise.
Yes.
Does that still apply this time of year when we have the colder weather, when we have all those other issues?
Of course it does. But what I would say is that try and do it during daylight hours, and then you're getting a little bit of vitamin D, even if it's... you know, even if it's cloudy or even wet. And in the winter, it's so dark, it's dangerous being a pedestrian walking or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
You need to be so careful. High-vis jackets are really important. And exercise is very good for your mental health as well. And I suppose that's probably the only other thing I'd like to mention, is that this time of year can be really, really tough on people. And a lot of people have lost people. And even if it's years ago, and it comes very much to the fore this time of year. And I suppose mind each other and mind yourself and allow yourself to remember somebody. Remembering somebody is it's not always a sad thing. It can be a very beneficial thing and very cathartic, and also it brings that person back into your world again.
Absolutely, indeed. And give yourself the space and give yourself a break and give yourself a treat, whatever, even if
absolutely.
That is just half an hour sitting in the window looking outside,
buying things for other people, and maybe, you know, just, you know, 5 minutes to yourself is probably
absolutely
really beneficial.
Siobhan, or sorry, there's no name of this one, it's a solution. A listener says they have 4 chest infections this year, an awful cough at the moment. Any solution? There's a lot of people like that for whom these are persistent problems.
Maybe going from one to another, or maybe it's one that hasn't resolved. And what does happen, you know, I was saying earlier that you know, often you don't have any phlegm in the chest, even though a cough can sound chesty, it isn't actually in the lungs itself.
Yes,
but sometimes if you do have congestion in the chest, or kind of inflammation which causes this kind of snotty stuff basically in your lungs, if that doesn't go completely, the next time you're a little bit vulnerable, it will get infected again. So you can go from one dose to another. Now that can be simple thing, could be just recurring infections, or it could be that it's a background history of asthma or COPD or some other chest issue. I think it's really important to make sure that they're treated effectively when you have them. It doesn't always need an antibiotic, but may need kind of a lot of supportive treatment. And maybe a chest x-ray if you've had several infections one after another and there's no obvious reason for it.
Okay, we've got loads of questions. What I'm going to do now is take a break for 2 minutes and let you send in yours as well, and we'll be putting them to Dr. Morfin when we're back.
Clare FM's Morning Focus with Gavin Grace.
You're welcome back to the programme. Dr. Morfin is still with us from the Ennis Family Medical Centre, with lots and lots of questions coming in. We've also got some which we've held over from the last time that she was with us too, so I'm going to get cracking into these, Dr. Finn. And I'm going to start off, a regular listener says that they have been diagnosed with lymphedema disease. It sounds kind of frightening, and they would like just kind of a general explanation and some advice.
Okay, lymphedema usually is... as a result of removing lymph nodes from a certain area. So your lymph system is a system that kind of helps clear, it helps fight infection, that's part of what it's for, but it's also, it helps clear some of the, metabolites that you don't want in your body. It wants to clear some of the nasty things out of your body, and fluid in particular. So if you, it's a very, very common thing after somebody has had cancer, breast cancer, surgery, and might have had their lymph nodes taken out as a result. And women will then often have lymphedema in their arm. So the same arm that the lymph nodes were taken out under the arm, and that arm might be swollen as a result. And you get, it gets very, very swollen, gets heavy, gets a lot of collection of lymph fluid in it. The treatment for it usually is to actually help massage it and try and kind of help this fluid to come from your arm. And you sometimes use these compression bandages or compression sleeves to put pressure on the arm and help the fluid drain away back into the centre of the body again. Sometimes you'll have it in your lower legs, similar reasons, probably because of damage to the lymph nodes around the groin. It can also happen for other reasons. It can happen because the lymph system is damaged in some other way. But they would be the most common things. So it's usually not a disease you're diagnosed with. It's usually as a result of something that's been done. In itself, it's most biggest problem is the fact that it's uncomfortable.
It sounds very painful.
It's very uncomfortable, yeah. And it often needs kind of very regular, physiotherapists are involved with this and do very regular massage to try and help it. And I know in the Clare Cancer place out in...
Sláinte an Clár in Kilmarnock, I presume?
Yeah, they do. They have people who do a lot of help with that, which is great. But it can also lead to increased risk of cellulitis, which are skin infections, because you can imagine the skin is very bumpy and swollen as a result. So they're the main problems with it. So that person probably has ongoing issues that cause this lymphedema in the first place.
Sláinte an Clár, I think, is a good maybe calling card for this person as well. Obviously, they're doing fabulous work, so not questioning that, but I think for this particular person,
possibly, they
do a lot of those kind of treatments that you wouldn't necessarily
be able to access in other ways.
And they
give great support to each other as well.
Absolutely, 100% indeed. Yeah. And if you're not in that part of the county, they've got their facility over in Chimgraney as well, at the Rahine Hospital too. So there's just plenty you can do on that particular one, and best of luck, listener, on that. Another texter: my partner has shingles but isn't sick with them. Are they contagious?
They are. Shingles is the same virus that you would that gives you chickenpox, but it's usually its second presentation in a person. So it is contagious, but not as contagious as chickenpox. It's a bit confusing, this
okay,
stuff.
No,
now.
Fair enough.
But shingles actually tends to be contagious by touch. So if you touch the rash, with chickenpox you have a rash all over you and you're generally unwell. With shingles you tend to have a pain in a particular area and you have a rash in a very small little area, only ever on one side of your body.
Okay.
And that's what's very diagnostic about it, actually.
And why is that?
It's because you get the rash comes in what's called a dermatome, and it's a nerve area of skin. One nerve, and that particular area of skin, sensitized area of that skin. So if it can't cross the midline, that's
fair enough.
Okay. The nature of it.
Okay.
So if you touch the shingles rash, the little vesicles that come up, these little blisteries, you can actually pass it on. So that's how it can be contagious. But that would be quite unusual. People wouldn't go around touching each other's rashes. You know? So it's not in any way as contagious as chickenpox is.
Fair enough. But
whoever
be.
Got the shingles was exposed to chickenpox.
Okay. I get you.
So
you
can
so be careful, basically.
Yeah,
seems to be
but you know, now there is a vaccine now to the virus that causes both, and people are becoming more and more interested in it. So that's something you could look into. But
is that expensive?
It is expensive. It's not part of the national program, so it is expensive. You have to go and access it yourself. But more and more, and it is part of the national program in states and other countries.
Okay.
You see, so people are more interested in it.
James has been in touch. He has a spot on his lung. I don't know how that's been found, and he's wondering, can it be serious?
Okay, a spot in the lung
is all I got.
It means that person had an x-ray. James had an x-ray, chest x-ray, for some reason, possibly for a persistent cough, something like that. Maybe it was even just a screening thing before surgery. A spot in the lung would be how you would often describe that there is a little shadow or a little area that doesn't look like it's as normal as it should be. On a chest x-ray, your lung should look black. So that means that they're full of air and there's nothing else in them. Structures, anything like your heart or your ribs, look white.
Okay.
So if there's a spot on it, it would be something that looks a little bit white. So it means it's something solid. Now, it may just be an old infection. Sometimes when elderly people, you see remnants of maybe they may have had an infection years and years ago, and you'll see it there. Sometimes it can be more serious. And if the thing is that this will be investigated no matter what. Even if James is feeling really well, they will have to go and say, okay, let's see what this is. Maybe have a CT scan to look at it in more detail and possibly have a biopsy of it.
Okay.
But definitely don't be concerned, but it certainly has to be looked into in more detail.
Going back to some of the questions that came in the last time you were with us that we didn't get to on that occasion, what causes pins and needles in the leg pain, down the leg and in the bum? The person was wondering.
Very often it's because of a problem with your back, your lower back, and it could be because of a disc problem or an arthritis problem in your spine, because the nerves that supply your lower legs come from your lower back. Okay, if it's on one side in particular, it could be because there's a disc bulging on one side and it's pushing on the nerve. Pins and needles is a nerve issue. So it's unless, of course, you know the way sometimes you'd fall asleep on something and the blood flow going back in sometimes feel
absolutely
like
needles. Yeah.
But most often it's a nerve issue. So for some reason the nerve has been either pushed or damaged slightly. Sometimes it'll happen as a result of medication. Sometimes it'll happen as a result of people with diabetes can have what's called a peripheral neuropathy, which is pins and needles in your lower legs or in your hands. People after chemotherapy will sometimes have that. So there's multiple different reasons, but very often if it's down one side, bum and the whole leg, it's because of a problem with your lower back and the nerve that supplies your leg being squashed.
Okay. As you mentioned, we talked about cancer a minute ago, and you mentioned diagnosed with breast cancer earlier this year, had a lumpectomy and radium treatment. Even though it's months since finishing my treatment, I'm still very tired. What would you recommend?
I think that is so common, and I think when people are going through treatment, they expect to be a little bit tired, they expect to be kind of emotional, they expect to have difficulties at that time, and very often it's just when it's all finished that they actually struggle more. And possibly because they're no longer doing anything, you know, when you're in the middle of the battle and the regime and
of
all
course,
the, you know, the radio
particular
is so time
on.
Consuming and people are usually around and helping out, you know, so sometimes when it all settles, that's when people kind of struggle a little bit more. So it's probably right now that she needs to be much kinder to herself and realise that she is tired. She's been through a huge amount, not only physically, emotionally as well. Christmas is a, like I said already, it's a difficult time of year. It makes people kind of sit and ponder and think about the what ifs. And maybe she's just feeling a little bit vulnerable as a result. I'd say rest as much as you can, get some nice exercise. Take advantage of friends. They want to help. They might have kind of thought she wanted to be left alone now. Go out and have a few lunches and enjoy yourself. And make nice plans for the Christmas and the year ahead. And
sure.
Look after yourself. Eat well. That's really probably the best thing to do.
From a medical point of view, you don't sound concerned at all. It wouldn't be unusual for somebody to be tired.
It wouldn't at all. No, I mean, if there's some new symptom that she's concerned about, obviously, and she's going to be having checkups now anyway, very frequently.
Yeah.
But really, I wouldn't be concerned medically at all. I think it's probably down to kind of the whole thing she's gone through. And nutritionally, make sure she's eating well. Make sure she's getting everything she needs.
A listener wanted to know, if after taking prescription tablets they were to bring up some phlegm, would they then lose some of the benefits of those tablets?
No. If you vomited after you took any tablet, within half an hour of taking a tablet, you would not get the benefit of the tablet.
Because you probably brought it back up.
Exactly. But phlegm, no. It's a bit unusual to suggest that you'd be bringing up phlegm as a result of a tablet, though.
Unless you have a cough anyway, maybe. I'm guessing.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, and in that case, no, absolutely not, because it's in different systems completely.
Different tube.
Yeah. To put it simply.
I want to take a multivitamin, says a listener, for general health, but everyone I've looked at has bulking agents is the one without them. I actually don't know what bulking agents are.
Well, you see, anything, any tablet, any medicine at all has to be made into a form that it's actually, you're able to swallow it.
Okay.
So they have a coating on them. They'd have stabilising agents. Like a lot of any processed food would be the same, you know.
Okay.
Bulking agents would probably be what it means, says. Bulking, it makes it into a particular size so it can be made into a tablet that's...
Put it, if you can put it into the package.
Into the package, exactly.
Yes, yeah.
Ones that would
certain
be...
shape.
Yeah, that's... ones that are in a kind of a powder form wouldn't have a bulking agent in them, probably. But I don't know if you need to be too concerned about that, because almost everything has these additional ingredients in it. I suppose, I mean, the answer to that is what I'd often say, is I go back to basics. You know, if you need multivitamins, you probably need vitamin C, which you can get through fruit.
Mm-hmm.
The bulking agents in that are fibre, which is good for you. You need your omega-3s and 6s, which you'll get through fish. You need your vitamin D, which you'll get through dairy. You know, zinc through nuts. You know, do it the simple way. Do it properly, and then you don't have to worry about any of these additional ingredients.
Okay. A listener wants to know, what would you recommend for leg stiffness, particularly at night?
One thing you should probably do is do a few stretches before you get into bed. It may be, again, coming from...
Like you're doing a sprint race at 100 metres before you lie down, is it?
Well, no, just simple kind of yoga stretches and stuff. They actually do help a little bit. If it's cramps now, it's saying stiffness or cramps?
Stiffness.
Stiffness, you'd often kind of be more concerned about an arthritis thing, you know, so it may be just the position they're in as well and they need to move around a little bit. Cramps are very common. Leg cramps are common at night. Magnesium tends to help them a little bit. Making sure that you're not dehydrated, making sure you're getting a bit of exercise during the day, because you'll get cramps if your blood flow is a little sluggish as well. So that's why the stretches and a little bit of movement actually really help.
Okay.
If it's persistent throughout the day, there may be something more going on. You might need some x-rays.
Fair enough. Maria wants to know, what are the effects of having a burst appendix? A lot of pain, I would have thought, first of all.
Jeez. Well, actually, often once it bursts, it doesn't really hurt so much anymore.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
That hopefully hasn't happened to that person. What happens with an appendix is that it's this little tiny little bit on the extra bit at the end of your cecum, part of your bowel, and it tends to get blocked, inflamed, infected, swollen, and then possibly burst. But you would hope that you would have gotten to the point that you'd have surgery before the burst. A burst appendix is actually quite a serious thing, because the essentially poison that's in this swollen, infected appendix goes into your abdomen then, and it can cause what's called a peritonitis. So you actually become very, very unwell. When people talk about sepsis, this would be one of those situations.
Okay.
Apart from the acute issues there, that you need to have surgery, you need to be given a lot of IV antibiotics and clean out the area that has this poison in it. There's other issues too, that stuff that's been in your abdomen can cause scarring and can cause different organs to stick together. This all sounds pretty disgusting,
yeah,
I know, but it's true.
Yeah.
And particularly, say, for women, because your womb and ovaries are in that area too, it can cause problems where their ovaries get stuck to bits of the bowel and they don't function very well, and their fertility issues.
Oh, wow.
So there's a lot of negative, very nasty things that can happen from it. Not something that you would hope to happen to anybody.
Fair enough. And if you're feeling the pains, obviously, go get yourself checked out.
Yes, definitely. Basically. And I'll just say, appendix is classic. The symptoms start with kind of vague abdominal pain in the centre, which that's where most people get vague pain, and it isn't really very serious.
Yes, yeah.
But it moves from there to the right hand side, right into the corner of the right hand side, and classically you'll see people, when they have it, they can't really straighten up, so they come in kind of bent over a little bit.
Okay.
Because when they straighten up, it actually hurts
like you know what,
and they lose their appetite with it as well. So just if you are in any way concerned, always check that out.
Is it true the appendix does nothing?
Apparently it's one of those vestigial organs. No, we don't know what it should have done or
Hang
why
on, one of those is a few of them.
No, there's only one.
Fair enough. Yeah, sorry.
No, there are a few other things that...
Oh really? So there's bits going on. There you go.
Can have your adenoids out, and you can have... I mean, even your spleen can be taken out and you function fine, you know?
Yeah,
so.
Fair enough. I thought that was kind of a protective shield or so.
Well, it's meant to be there.
But
you function okay without it. You know, you can manage without lots of bits, you know?
That's fair enough. We talked about this already, shingles, but listeners wondering, their child had chickenpox last week. Can they pick up shingles now because his father has them?
Yeah, the father has the shingles because the child and himself were exposed to the same person with the chickenpox in
Fair
the first
enough.
Place. But yes, the child can develop shingles in the future.
Okay, so
and you
could it happen in the short term?
No.
No.
Very unlikely. No, because the child has got a kind of an immune process going on there. But in the future, the child can develop shingles.
Fair enough. We'll leave it there. All right, thank you very much for joining us in the programme this morning. As always, our medical advice is just that. And we will encourage you, if you've got any questions or whatever it may be, our concerns about your own health, please do get them checked out. You wanted to say something. Apologies.
Not at all. Yeah, I just want to remind people that there is a New Year's Eve ball in the Savoy in Limerick in aid of the Irish Heart Foundation. It's the third year of it. It's great crack. It's a very good cause. All the money that is raised goes towards the Irish Heart Foundation, and in particular to teaching secondary school students CPR, which is a wonderful thing. It's definitely a programme that should be across all the schools. So just in case anybody's interested, you can get your tickets through Eventbrite.
And you're looking up New Year's Eve ball at the Savoy in Limerick, obviously December 31st, and that's an aid of the Irish Heart Foundation. Dr. Maura Finn, as always, thanks very much for joining us in the programme this morning. Back in more in a moment.
If it matters to you, let us know. Contact us now. 1850 400 964 or email focus@clare.fm.